after going through this process of creating different activities, Diana and I have decided that the answer is...
We've learned from her. We've lost debates to her badly, by the way. And we are edu-stoked to have her back on. It's the Alice Keeler next.
And now, it's time for another edulicious episode of the Bentley Brothers Podcast, bringing you what's current and what works in education. Here are your hosts, Scott and Tim Bentley.
Bentley Brothers, Bentley, Bentley Brothers, bringing education information like no other. Bentley Brothers, yep. Bentley, Bentley Brothers, bringing education information like no other. Yep. First name Bentley, last name Brothers, bringing education information like
no other. That's right, we got Alice Keeler back on the show again. Of course, if you don't know who she is, I don't know what's your problem, but she is out there and about and teaching everybody about Google Classroom. She is the guru of Google Classroom. She's an author, she's a blogger, she's a speaker, and she's a mother.
A five.
How many kids do you have again?
Cinco.
Cinco kids. You beat me by one. And how old are your kids now?
13, 11, 9. The six-year-old almost turned 7. So, of course, I'm going to take her to Vegas. That's what you do. And then the baby is four.
Wow.
I guess we can ask you more about that later.
And you still have time to, you're going to England pretty soon, aren't you?
Yeah, that's coming up. I think going there about the 12th. So I'm excited about it. Taking my 11-year-old with me.
Oh, cool. That's very cool. To
take one of the little munchkins.
Right on. So you got a new book coming out about incorporating Google Classroom and Google products in with math. Is that right?
It is out. I have 500 copies in my closet. And yeah, it's teaching math with Google Apps. So we do have some Google Classroom tips in there, but really the focus is on Google Apps in general and how to innovate your teaching using technology.
Right on. So tell us about it. What's in there for teachers?
What is in here is lots of Bitmojis, which is, you know, like the most important part. me and Diana, Diana Harrington's my co-author, and we got definitely very nerdy. It took us 2 years to write this book. And our focus is, I know a lot of times, I think the very first question that I'll get from math teachers often is, well, if we use a Chromebook, how do they write on the screen? And my answer is, that's the wrong question. How do I interact better with students? How do I give better feedback? How do I increase the critical thinking? How do I let students be creative? And if anybody knows me anytime in the last, since the summer, I massively fangirl Joe Bowler, who is a Stanford math professor, like massively fangirl Joe Bowler. And I got her to write the foreword of the book, which is hands down the best part. Let me see if I can flip to it really quick. So what Joe Bowler puts in here, she's got a really great graphic of skills that students need for the 21st century. And I love this line that she puts here. Invite students into the 21st century in your mathematics classroom. Engage them with inspiring visual tasks and equip them with the mathematical tools that they can use to solve problems and to make a difference in the world. So Joe Bowler, that really is probably the best part of the book.
Right, yeah, on. She is amazing. I love her U-cubed unit of study. That's a really great way to start the year. Alice, what are some of the tools that you talk about inside your new book?
Well, we go for G Suite. So we're going with Google Classroom, Google Docs, Sheets, Slides, Drawings, Forms, some maps. I even got a little bit of Google Flights in there. What do you think that our main, the tool that I have the most in here is? Take it. And we already have guests.
I'm going to go with the Google Drawings.
Google Sheets.
Right. One would think because the answer is always a spreadsheet, Tim.
Right.
But no, after going through this process of creating different activities, Diana and I have decided that the answer is Google Slides. Google Slides is the answer to teaching math. Like, you can do almost everything with it. And really what's awesome is it's a blank canvas that you can model math, do a variety of things, do one step at a time. You can animate your math. But it's that collaboration where I can insert comments and have feedback, and this is the most important, conversations with students about their work and help develop their thinking. And so it's, you know, you can't talk a student into being a critical thinker. You have to let them think, get some feedback and let them think some more. And so Slides is really excellent for that, especially if you use Google Classroom, although you don't have to. You have access to students' work while they still care about it. As soon as a student thinks they're done, then your feedback just doesn't have the impact it does as when they're still working on something. And so changing the assignment from do this work and then what's the feedback loop on that? When are they going to get feedback back on it? If they get it at all, it's going to be the next day. And so they're definitely not caring about it anymore and they're moving on to the next assignment. So instead you switch that to they have to have a feedback conversation with you about their math. So they give it a go on the slides, you give them feedback, and you don't grade them on getting the right answer. That's the kind of things that give students math anxiety, is they're afraid of getting it wrong. There's lots of ways that you can come up with the wrong answer per se, but still show that you have understanding of the concept, which is where we're really trying to move in the 21st century for math, is more about conceptual understanding rather than procedural steps that a computer can do. So having that feedback conversation, they're graded on the conversation, that they deepen their understanding, not necessarily get to the right answer. Hopefully they do get there, but that's not really necessarily the focus, is do less problems, but do them more in depth where they really get to understand it and have that back and forth conversation.
Now, there's skeptics out there. There are people that talk about the Common Core and they say, oh, no right answer. Oh, so 2 + 2 = 5 now. Is that the kind of math we're teaching kids? Is that what you're saying, Alice?
No one said it was the right answer, but I mean, the truth is I can, this is a common occurrence at my house. We have a Google Home in the kitchen, and you know, me and my 5 kids and my husband, we are eating dinner, and one of my kids will just shout out to the universe some question, and oftentimes it's a math question. Okay, Google, what's 357 divided by 2.8? Okay, Google, what's the diagonal of a rectangle with a width of 5 and a length of 7? Like, you can literally just ask the universe, and this stuff comes to you. It's 2017. Let's not bury our heads in the sand and pretend this technology doesn't exist. I carry it in my pocket. Every single kid does. I remember when I was first teaching math in the math department, we didn't want to let kids use calculators because what? Are they going to have a calculator with them all the time? Not only will they have a calculator with them all the time, they're going to have a calculator with them all the time that shows their steps. Photo math. Every kid knows about it. They're using it for their homework. You just hold it over. You don't even have to, like, take a picture. You just hold the phone over the math book, and it gives not only the right answer, but it gives the procedural steps. So is it cheating to use a tool that you have access to 24/7 in your everyday life and will only get better?
Tim, you answer that question. I'm not taking that one.
Yes. My answer is yes.
The answer is no. It's that we ask better questions that are about thinking and understanding. I spend a lot of time teaching my kids how to do the quadratic formula, where I can literally just ask my phone and it'll show me a parabola. But how many of my students know what to do with it? You guys know what percent of adults have number fluency?
I would just be guessing.
Well, if I had enough number fluency.
I heard if you just guess at answers, you know, you're 90% chance of getting it wrong.
Yep,
and that 85% of the stats quoted
are
just randomly are incorrect. Yeah. And that one is also incorrect.
So if you go do a search for this, multiple articles come up and you'll see that it's fairly consistent around 9%. So if we want to criticize the Common Core, can we really say that what we've been doing has been working? It's not uncommon for me to meet someone, I say I'm a math teacher, and for them to, like, you know, shudder back, and then they don't have positive associations, and you hear this a lot, well, I'm not good at math. Joe Bowler says that's bunk. We're all good at math. And how we teach math and how we help kids to feel about math, that matters. And I will tell you that I personally can just attest to this. I have felt dumb my entire life since I had to repeat the 4th grade because I could not do those time math tests. Even after 2 years of doing the 4th grade, I still never passed the time math test. Ironically, I've always been good at word problems and fractions, but because I can't do it fast, I get anxiety to this. I'm 40 years old, and to this day, if you ask me 6 × 7, like, I will freeze. Like, I won't even answer you. My heart will race. It's something I have.
42.
Thank you. That's very helpful. See, I can ask the universe or I can just ask Tim. Either way, I'm covered.
I got my times tables down. I can't teach math, but, you know, I got my times tables down.
Yeah, also, I'm going to go bigger level picture question for okay. you that I think maybe some people will be wondering is there a problem with the amount of expectations we have for kids? Because if you try to get through all of that, everything that I have to teach in fifth grade, if I try to get through that and make sure that the kids actually understand it, give them the time they need, there's no way. It's just not, I mean, I'm just teaching content and hoping, I'm like throwing things at the wall and hope he makes it. So, you know,
I keep my Joe Bowler.
Right. Totally. I'm a big Joe Bowler fan boy too, I guess. But like, so with the current standards, the way they are, even though you can criticize Common Core either way, aren't we stuck in a system that doesn't allow us to succeed?
You're asking me? Absolutely. I think if you take the number of things that we ask teachers to do, it is literally impossible. Like, literally impossible. We just set every teacher up to fail. There's no question about that. I'd like to have some more realistic standards. So one of the things that Joe Bowler says, it's a drinking game. It's how many times I mention Joe Bowler. And I cuddle with her book.
Kombucha only, please, so, folks. Kombucha only.
You know, as we know, covering is not teaching. So you can cover all of the content, but how much do the kids actually understand and can use? If they can't use it, why are we teaching it? We might as well just bake cookies, cancel math class. And so what she says is, you know, if you go deeper, you're not going to cover as much. But what percent do the kids remember? If you covered all of it, what percent do the kids remember and can apply? So if we, you know.
Well. If you're making cookies, they will remember it because, you know, that's a lot of fractions.
I had a toaster oven in my classroom.
We might as well make cookies, and you're right about that.
But she says if you go deeper and you focus on understanding and kids really understand the math and we focus on them being critical thinkers and not procedural step followers, they will do better than students who have covered all of the content.
So, Alice, I have a question. I'm going to go back to your previous book. I'm going to go back to your previous book, 50 Things to Go Further with Google Classroom. That one right there. And this is awesome. And I love the it says a student-centered approach. So when you look through the book itself, by the way, yes, I have a copy right here with me as well. It has a lot of great things. Should I go through and tab them? Should I go through this book one at a time, starting with number one? Does it mean that number one's the most important? Or how do I approach your book as a teacher?
This one's tough because, like, my best tip is you should number your assignments. And I think it's, like, number three. It's number three. Number your assignments.
Okay.
So it was number one for a while, but ultimately, you know, number one is start with Google Classroom. and that really helps you to let go and spend more time with students, which is what I'm all about with using technology, is how do I have more of my students doing the work and my students doing the thinking and it being more about my students than about me. So when the book is a student-centered approach, you start with how our technology helps to put the focus back on kids. No, you don't have to start with number one. Start with number three or anywhere. So that's kind of the style with all of my books, is you can go open up to any page without having to necessarily read through and find an activity that you can use tomorrow. So I have a little secret for you. You're the first to know. I have to send you a copy of the book for sure, and then maybe you'll notice. But this has 50 G Suite activities. That's what it says here on the cover, right? Except... I don't know if you can see this. It actually starts. Oh, I better just turn to the page. It does not start with number one. It starts with number zero. So we actually have 51 things. No one's called us on it yet.
It's like zero period.
It's like zero period.
You get an extra.
Which, by the way, in California, I think is not going to start until 8:30 now in California.
Okay, so Alice, I want to get a little TMZ on you here. Is that okay? So you are out there, man. I mean, you are out there. Twitter is like owned by Alice Keeler, pretty much, I think. So people wonder, I mean, inquiring minds want to know, how do you do this? You got five kids. You're like, are you scheduling your tweets? Or like, how are you on all these Twitter chats? You're
flying to England.
I mostly do not schedule my tweets. My website does send out every hour from a blog post from the last year. So people think that I'm up at 3 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes I am, but usually that's just my website with a plugin on there. So that accounts for 24 of the 400 tweets I will tweet a day.
And do you have an assistant that's tweeting, or are you? Is that why you had kids? I mean, or so they could tweet?
I have a whole Twitter farm going on here, and my kids are just working out their little thumbs.
You know, I love it.
I share what I'm doing, and you can always tell when I'm having a good rant with somebody.
Yeah. I love it. And you know, I love how accessible you are to all your fans out there. And the other thing I heard about you, which I actually, at first I was like, what? And then I was like, it makes total sense. It's like, you do not take questions over DMs. You want, if people are going to ask you a question, ask me in the public view. And so when I answer it, everybody benefits from the answer. Don't be asking me questions on DM, right?
That's true. I've had a couple people call me out that that I'm so rude. And it's like, I'm not saying I won't answer your question, but that's the point of Twitter. Twitter is a public platform. If I could, I'd just get rid of Twitter DM. Text message me if you want to send me a private message. I'm on Twitter so I can connect with people. And then, you know, it's the power of the group. And so how many times have I responded to somebody and a bunch of other people dogpile on with extra resources or like, no, Alice, that doesn't work anymore. Now you have to do it this way. Like, why ask one person when you can ask 93,000?
So another thing I really like about your book is it does say student-centered approach. And when you look at a lot of the ideas in your 50 book, your 50 Things to Go Further with Google Classroom, Alice, I think you really do see that. Is there something that you were particularly, maybe as you're out there speaking, somebody came and said, I'm using it this way. And you were like, wow, that's really cool. I didn't think of that. That would make it in my next 50 Things book. Or are you finding yourself getting ideas as you're out there speaking with other educators?
All the time. And that's really the fuel for my blog. I mean, a good chunk of my blog posts are because someone asked me a question or interact with somebody. So this woman, Riley Owensby, on Twitter, she is a special ed teacher in Alaska. And she tweeted me, I don't know, probably about a month ago now, and asked me a math question. And I answered it. And she's like, I'm doing that tomorrow. And then she tweets me back the next day with like super excited. You know, my kids, like, they love this. And I think just every single day since then, she's tried something new. But she has shown me, she's taken my stuff and tweaked it and shown me a new way to do it. And so I was doing a teaching math with Google Apps workshop in Dallas. And the day before, Riley tweeted out how she had taken pictures of Machu Picchu. She's not sure if she was using the Google Cardboard, but she was still doing it in the street view where you're getting all the angles. And then so the kids took screenshots, put it in the slides. And so instead of doing a boring worksheet where you identify acute and obtuse angles, she had them identify angles by drawing them on top of the picture in collaborative Google Slides. So all the students are on the same one. So I'm really big into this. We're a community of learners and we help each other get better. Well, shoot, that was my activity the next day and we were rocking it. I'm going to tell you a little tip to kick it up a notch. Have you guys seen my Chrome extension Drive Slides?
No.
Oh my gosh, you guys. Me and Matt Miller developed this. So if you go to the Chrome Web Store, alicekeeler.com/web store is all my Chrome extensions, but Drive Slides is our newest one. If you have a folder of pictures, you just...
Oh, I have seen this, yes.
Yeah, you just hit the Drive Slides Chrome extension, and like magic, it just takes all the pictures and puts them into a single Google Slides. And so you can have if students through Google Classroom submit a screenshot or a picture. So just as easy as that, then just turning it in. And then that's the beauty of Google Classroom. It puts it all into a folder in Google Drive. So I'm all set to go. Students turn into Classroom, it's in a folder. I click the button and like that, I have a slides of all my students' work ready to present and for us to collaborate on.
Yeah, super sweet. So what's the next 50 book gonna be?
So I have a few books in the works. I'm working with the same co-author, Libby Miller, who wrote both of the Google Classroom books with me. She's actually an English teacher, even though I'm a math teacher. And so we're working on teaching ELA with Google Apps, since I already have the teaching math. And then I just well, we should hopefully come out in June. It's totally finished. Is Ditch That Homework with Matt Miller. And then Google Apps for Littles with Christine Pinto. That's going to be submitted to the publisher this month.
Give us a little highlight. Ditch That Homework. Is it like one page long?
You know, Matt and I just really tried to not focus on complaining about homework. You know, it causes severe stress and family fighting, and research is nebulous on this to how much benefit there really is academically. But let's move past that, and what do you do instead? So really, it's about being a teacher in the 21st century of how do we just teach differently. Then it's not 1980 anymore, so we give some strategies for how to connect with parents and different types of assignments and activities that you can do with kids. So it's really a book about teaching, not as much about ditching homework, although we have some good parent quotes in there.
So are you doing this full time now, I assume? You're not trying to teach college still, are you?
I teach, and I have two sections this next semester, maybe three. Rumors they're going to give me a third one.
Oh, my goodness.
Can I share with like the biggest transformation I had this semester? So this semester, yes. I'm teaching only online, which normally I teach blended face-to-face. And so I have changed really one major component of my class. So I'm big into student voice. I want to hear from my students, and what my students say should influence my next lesson plan. I don't like to build them out in advance. So I had a Google form where they would every week just tell me questions, comments, concerns, and compliments. And then I would make a point of responding individually to every student in the spreadsheet, and then I mail merge it back. Well, as I kind of shared earlier, you know, when students are done with something, they're done, and they're just not taking your feedback back as meaningful. So I would, you know, they turn in by Tuesday, and it would take me till about Friday, Saturday for everyone to sign in and for me to reply to everybody. So by that time, they didn't care anymore, and almost nobody wrote me back. So this semester, I switched. Instead of doing it in a Google form, I now have students write their question, compliment, concern, or suggestion into the private comments of Google Classroom. Now, private comments are like the best thing ever because it's not a Google Doc. I don't have to open it. You know, I can get to it really fast. And that's really the key, is if you look at the research, what makes the big difference on student learning is you know, the teacher building a relationship with kids and those interactions. And the faster I can have positive interactions with students, and it's not just leaving a comment, it's a conversation. So they sign in once a week and they give me their comment, and I have a great workflow. I prefer to do it from my phone. So I have a filter on my Gmail that automatically stars it and labels it as a private comment, so I know to respond to those really fast. And I prioritize that over anything else. And so then I tap on it, open it up, opens up the app in Google Classroom. I reply back, you know, I'm speedy with my thumbs. You can tell from my tweeting. I reply back really quick, and then I delete the email. So it's kind of like a checklist. And so I make sure that I don't miss anybody, and it really doesn't take me very long, and I try to reply back almost immediately. And even though my class is online, my students in the very first weeks were saying, like, this is one of the best classes I've taken. I feel so connected to this class. Like, it's an online class, and they're feeling like they have had better interactions than they had in their face-to-face classes. And hands down, the best thing I've ever done for myself as an educator.
That's very cool.
Alice, I'm assuming... Okay, so you're a superstar on this. You know how to do this. I'm assuming that teachers that might be like, oh my gosh, I have no idea where to start on all that. It sounds amazing. Can go to your website and find tutorials? Is that?
I mean, pretty much anything I say is somewhere on my website. But I've also started a new workshop. I've had a lot of people try to encourage me to just make an online class of videos that, Alice, you can just sell them for $35 and just make a lot of money, and people just pay for it. I refuse to do this. Like, my whole shtick with teaching is about interactions. Like, it, you know, that we should be interacting with students, and how do I show you how to do that if we're not interacting? So I have a workshop that I'm doing is called Go Slow. So instead of 6 hours, drink with a fire hose. And believe me, if you're going to do a 6-hour workshop with me, it will feel like it, but it'll be fun. I do it through Google Classroom, and I have one activity for you to do where we collaborate and interact together as a group. And then I give you the directions for how to recreate this yourself for you to go try it with your students and report back. And I do the exact same thing where, because you report back into the private comments, And so I make a point of replying back to every workshop participant every week individually, and to give them support and advice for any challenges they had in trying to do the activity. So I have, in one of my Go Slow workshops is to how to filter the email and to do the private comments, because that's the best thing I can do.
Yeah, and Scott, you know she's got a filter on her email for our emails too. Did she tell you about that?
Goes straight to my...
Goes straight to the trash, I think, or something.
I don't blame her.
Spam. Okay. So, Alice, we're going to switch gears with you right now and play a little game, if you don't mind. You are, of course, one of the most famous professors ever from beautiful Fresno, California. Is that right?
I am from Fresno.
Tell us about Fresno. What is it like there in beautiful Fresno, California?
Well, I'll show you my winter jacket. It's right here. This is it. This is about all I need.
For those of you listening at home, that is a lightweight sweatshirt.
It's not even a sweatshirt. I wouldn't call it a sweater either. It's just an over something.
It's like a big scarf.
It's like a big scarf. You totally have that. So the weather here is pretty much always awesome. And so when I travel and I get off the plane and it's raining, I'm just like, what is going on here? Like, I have no perspective of that.
Water falling from the sky.
4 hours from San Francisco and 4 hours from LA. And my house costs about a third the cost to live in those places. Actually, maybe even less than that. So this is a good...
And about triple the price of Nebraska. Okay. So
that's probably true.
So today we're going to ask you some very challenging questions.
All right.
About Fresno.
Okay.
And we're going to call this little game Fresno, Fres Yes.
Fres Yes. All right.
Yeah. And there's actually a publication, I think, called Fres Yes, isn't there? Yeah. So, Scott, why don't you tell our audience who Alice is going to be competing for today?
Alice, you're going to be competing for Jennifer Feliciano, a second grade teacher in Irvine. Yeah, if you're able to answer 2 out of 3 questions correctly, Jennifer will be awarded a free download of an album by the ridiculously popular edgy rock band Rockin' the Standards.
And she'll be awarded, Alice?
Well, she can pick whichever book she wants. I'll send her one.
Whoa, she gets her choice of which one she wants. Okay, she's going to win an Alice Keeler book with a big 50 on the front.
Yes.
And that's how we can recognize your books. So, Alice, here we go with question number one. Fresno's rich history dates back many years. Well, by California standards, I guess. One part of the history is around a military fort called Fort Miller. Have you heard of this?
No.
Uh-oh. We're in trouble now. Fort Miller was built near which river? Was it A?
The Kings River.
B?
The San Joaquin River.
Or C?
The Merced River.
Those are all rivers that are...
Oh, you're Googling it. No Googling it. Just stop that right now.
Hands up.
Hands up. No Googling.
It's not cheating to use tools. You have access...
It is for our game.
...in your everyday life. I'm sorry that you asked such lame questions.
You're the first person.
We usually are calling our own questions lame, but thank you.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Thanks. I'm going to go with the Merced River.
The Merced River is completely wrong.
Okay.
But you're close. You're only one away. It was B, the San Joaquin River, and you guessed C, the Merced River. So you're really close.
Because I actually am not positive there is a Merced River. There's a Merced.
There is a Merced, yes. Number two, California has a rich Spanish history. In fact, the word Fresno comes from the Spanish meaning of which of these? Is it A?
Land of grass.
B?
Rolling hills.
Or C?
The Merced River. Just kidding. Ash tree.
Okay, so is it A, land of grass, B, rolling hills, or C, ash tree? A-S-H.
Well, considering that Fresno has no hills, is about as flat as you can go, we'll have to go with C.
Ash tree. That is correct.
Woo-hoo.
I took away our sound effects on Google Hangouts, and we just don't know what to do.
Thank you, yeah. Google.
Get like some, you know, real sound effect thingies.
There was actually a film that has its setting in Fresno.
What?
Can you believe it?
Fresno.
Huh? What did you say?
It's called Fresno.
It's called...
Look it up.
Okay, well, that's a different one.
This is another movie.
Okay, it's the X-Files Chupacabra episode.
Gotcha.
Woo, really? Okay, well...
Okay,
you're like, you should write our questions for us. The movie tells of two sisters that find themselves in trouble after one accidentally kills someone.
Oh.
Was the name of this blockbuster hit, which I'm sure you have already seen many times, is the name of this movie A?
Murdered in Fresno.
Or B?
Addicted to Fresno.
Or C?
Fresno never lets you go.
So your three choices for the movie name are Murder in Fresno, Addicted to Fresno, or Fresno never lets you go. What do you think it is, Alice?
Whatever you don't... Go ahead. Alice, do you think you know?
Well, Fresno has a high crime rate, so let's go with A.
Are you sure? You mean Murder in Fresno? That kind of sounds obvious, doesn't it?
It feels obvious. No?
We have Addicted to Fresno also, and Fresno Never Lets You Go. But if that's your final answer, we'll take it.
Maybe I meant Addicted in Fresno.
Addicted to Fresno?
Maybe.
Oh, yeah, that's really a good choice, Alex.
Yeah! That is correct.
Addicted? Are you addicted to Fresno?
The episode of the X-Files would have been much better.
That would have been much better.
Yeah, a lot of things would be much better. But okay, Scott, how did Alice do in today's amazing game show with the best questions ever written?
Best questions.
Good job, Alice. Tim, take it easy. I wrote the questions this time. Alice, you got. Alice, you got 2 out of 3 questions correctly, which is good enough to be a winner.
All right.
Congratulations, Alice. You won absolutely nothing. But Jennifer Feliciano in Irvine, California, a second grade teacher, just won a free download of Rockin' the Standards, education rock and roll music for 2nd through 6th graders and their teachers.
And she also won?
Oh, yeah. Well, her choice.
She won a book,
or you know, teaching math. Now, you guys do know it is a thing to take a Dave Burgess consulting book and rub it on your face. It's hashtag DBC Book Face Club.
We were going to go with some questions about hashtag EduCrimes, Alice, and have you tell what are the biggest crimes in education that are going on. But maybe we'll save that for our next time.
Yes.
Alice Keeler and EduCrimes. All right. So, Alice, why don't you tell our audience how they can follow up on today's show?
Well, always my website, alicekeeler.com. I like to joke that that's the answer to all of life's problems. And, of course, I tweet maybe a little excessively at Alice Keeler. And then you can find links from my website to how you can do some of the Go Slow workshops if you are interested in doing that.
Awesome. And that's K-E-E-L-E-R, all E's in for vowels in Keeler. And Scott, why don't you remind our listeners about Global School Play Day in case they haven't heard the Bedley Brothers lately.
Hey, Tim and Alice. The first Wednesday in February, every first Wednesday in February is dedicated to unstructured play. In this last year, our third year of Global School Play Day, over 250,000 kids were playing from 50 plus nations around the world, and teachers are saying, hey, we can't keep doing this craziness. We need to give some balance to our kids. So go to globalschoolplayday.com, check out what it's all about. It's all about giving kids an opportunity to be self-directed decision makers, which leads to all kinds of great impacts, such as building empathy, building problem solving skills. I could go on for hours, Tim.
And it has academic benefits.
Oh, huge academic benefits. Huge academic benefits. Absolutely. So check out Global School Play Day. We're aiming for this next year, 2018, we're aiming for 500,000 kids from around the world playing. And if we hit 1,000,000, we'll be really excited. So.
And Alice, I was going to challenge you to do Global School Play Day with your class, but you're virtual now, so you're doing online teaching. I guess you could somehow do play online, right?
I got some spreadsheet games that we can do.
Right on. Okay. And thanks so much again for being on the show, Alice.
Yeah, thanks, Alice.
Talking to you again, and maybe crossing paths in the airport one of these days or something, you know?
Possible.
Yeah, as you're traveling the world. So thanks for watching, everybody, and most of all, thanks for watching
Mom and Dad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Bedley Brothers, Bedley, Bedley Brothers, bringing education information like no other. Bedley Brothers, Bedley, Bedley Brothers, bringing